हरि ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 142. The first of these groups says, Brahman is like a great sky. The individual soul, covered by illusion, is like a small portion of the sky within a clay pot. When ignorance cuts Brahman into tiny pieces, those pieces are the individual souls. In that way, the soul and Brahman are different. Right? So they're trying to show that there's a difference there. Even though we'll say is that they are non-different from the Lord, because they're Satchitananda, he's Satchitananda, so the same quality. So we see here is that it's the opposite. Even though they're saying everything's one, here they make a difference.
Yes.
Right? Like that. The second group of philosophers argue against this idea, saying this idea is an embarrassment to Brahman. For this idea says that Brahman can be cut into pieces, and also that Brahman itself may be overpowered by illusion, right? Which is also a correct aspect. The truth is not like that. Please note that the individual spirit soul is like a reflection of Brahman. The individual spirit soul is like the sun or moon reflected on the water. The individual soul is an illusion, and by him the illusory material world is imagined to exist. But if he's an illusion, why would he even be conscious to carry out that aspect of an illusion? Right? But, or if you're saying he's conscious because he's Brahman. In truth, only Brahman exists. There's nothing but it. The individual soul is not different from it, and neither is the material world different from it. So they're both trying to establish, you know, the position of how the soul and Brahman without accepting the Lord and his energies. So that's the problem here. So one, you have Brahma Parinamavada, it's the transformation of Brahman. So then the problem is they're saying it's an embarrassment to Brahman because you're saying Brahman is cut into pieces. But then the second one is an embarrassment because they say it's transformed. Mm. Like that. So both of them will have a problem because in this, Brahman is only one, but at the same time they're accepting illusion, the jivas, and all this. They say it's all one, but they don't. So at the same time, is they don't accept that Brahman has energies. Because if they accept Brahman has energies, the energies transform, the Brahman is unchanged, but at the same time is there is a change in the energies of the Lord. So the internal becomes external, and then the jivas become conditioned like this.
When they say about Brahma Parinamavada, so even we say that there is a Parinamavada, but because we have the practice.
No, but we say Shakti Parinamavada. We don't say Brahma Parinamavada. They say Brahma Parinamavada. We say Shakti Parinamavada.
So because Shakti is missing in their aspect, that's where
yes.
Thing is going wrong,
otherwise. Yes, yes. A great blunder rests in both these philosophies. A blunder blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas, right? Because they just have this idea because it sounds good. Right? Now, whether it's a reality or not, that doesn't matter, but it sounds good.
But this is a, I can say, human tendency.
Yes, yes. It is.
It sounds good.
It doesn't matter as long as it fits our idea of how I'm going to be the controller and enjoyer.
Yes. Right?
Yes. So that's the point. That's why we say a blunder blinded by unthinking allegiance. Right? So it's always brought up, oh, not thinking, oh, you're just accepting without, you know, how you say, what is it? Blind following or something like that? You know, like this. But the point is that the Vaishnavas, it's not blind following, it's realized. But you can't see it from the mundane. So therefore, someone on the mundane platform, them not being able to see it, they think the Vaishnavas also can't see it, and it's just a matter of faith.
Yes.
Hence, they call anything that you have faith in, they call that subjective. It's not objective.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? But they're very subjective about their objectivity, that you things must be objective in the way they say it's objective. So they're totally subjective about that.
Without realization, it's only a play of words.
Yes, that's all. It's all. You're just dealing with people's their attachments. That's all. It's just a matter, are they attached to karma, or attached to gyan, or some combination. That's all there is. And Vaishnavism means you're attached to Krishna. It's not that you get rid of attachment. You just switch it from the mundane to the spiritual. That's all. So this idea is that, oh, the control of the senses and all that, it's about that. That's what makes things dry. That's where a mistake is made. Because we're used to the idea of controlling the senses, but from the aspect of karma and jnana. Not from transcendence. Because in the material, controlling the senses means they're not engaged. Right? While in the spiritual platform, then engaging the senses in the Lord's service means they're not engaged in your own service. Right? Because material, if I engage them, it's for me. And if it's not for me, I don't engage them. So it's about ourself. That's where the judgment's taken. If it's for me, I do the work. If it's not for me, I don't do the work. But the spiritual platform, it's not for me, it's for Krishna, I do the work. So it's very different than either on the material platform. So this kind of aspect, you'll see all philosophies will have this mistake. Because they can't accept, or don't accept, or don't know, due to ignorance, about their relationship with the Lord and the relationship of the world with the Lord. That's the meaning of Yukta Vairagya, is everything's engaged in the Lord's service. Because we can say, much of the time it's used to be, oh, the Vedic stuff we're just doing, and then if we use the contemporary or modern stuff, that's Yukta Vairagya. But the point is engaging your body in the Lord's service, that's Yukta Vairagya. Because it's Krishna's energy. So it's a matter of you're engaging the Lord's energies in the Lord's service. But you're dealing with those energies and that you would generally identify that are connected with your field of activities. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say I, go to, a friend's house, go into his drawer and under the socks or wherever he keeps it, take a stack of money and go down and give it in charity. So is that Yukta Vairagya? I gave it in charity. No, because it's not yours. Right? It's because you think it's yours, that's therefore. So then when you actually see everything as belonging to Krishna, then everything's Yukta Vairagya. So that's the difficulty. It's like if you say something about, oh, why are you using this, then they'll just, one will go on, or how is it Yukta Vairagya, and they'll go on, well, don't you use airplanes, don't you use phones? Yeah, but aren't you using the body? Who do the eyes belong to? Right? Shastra says that you see because Krishna sees. So are you going to use that connected to Krishna or not? If you use it, that's and for not for particular benefit, pure devotion. In other words, Yukta Vairagya is pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So we have these external concepts of what things are. And because of that, then we get distracted. Like he says here, blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas. Right, so anywhere where you have to think, that's generally where the trouble comes up.
Yeah. When you try to explain the new people, about Yukta Vairagya's view of devotional service, in their understanding, so Vairagya that is the devotional service, that's their understanding.
Yes. No, they'll do. So, but at the same time, as those who are new, it's easy enough to point out that there's a difference. So as long as that's there, but if someone has, for years, has their own idea of that, what that renunciation is, that'll be more difficult to explain it to them. We always have to remember, new people aren't the problem. Yeah. Yeah, like that. That's the point. Means people who don't have faith, then you have to be very careful what you say. But once someone has faith, Shraddha, then it's easy to train them. Like that. Because they don't know, so you explain to them. But if they think they know, then that's more of a problem. Then unthinking allegiance to their ideas comes up. Mm-hmm. They do not accept that Brahman has inconceivable power, right? See, this is the crux. Then all their ideas are worthless, right? So that they want to show that the living entities are part of Brahman. So that in this way, they're non-different from, because they're trying to show a non-difference. One's trying to show is you've cut Brahman into pieces, so therefore the soul's non-different from Brahman. That way, then when you give up the pieces and you just merge back, then you're Brahman. But you're already Brahman anyway. Right? So that one does that, but then how can you cut up something that's unlimited and with no parts? Because that's one of the Upanishadic points, is that Brahman doesn't have parts. Right? So then they try to answer that with, no, it's like the reflection in the water. The moon's reflected in the water, but it's not actually there. It looks like the moon, but it's not. So in this way, Brahman is unchanged. But that's actually for a super soul, because it's one person who expands this in many. So you think it's many, many super souls, but it's only one super soul. You know? So it's just a matter of where do you apply the example. Does that make sense? So both are trying to answer a problem, but one, and by answering the one, they create another, and the other one solves that problem, but then creates its own. So each one solves each other's problem, but creates the problem that the other one solves. Yeah. Some talk of Maya, illusion. Others talk of avidya, ignorance. Others talk of pretending, and still others talk of pretending to pretend. But if they say that Brahman has no power to do anything, then how can they establish their idea that only Brahman and nothing else exists? Right? Because otherwise, where does illusion come from if Brahman's not, if it's not coming from Brahman? In every one of their ideas is seen the fatal flaw that kills the impersonalist philosophy. If we accept the idea that Brahman has inconceivable power, and if we say Brahman is the only thing that exists, then Brahman has no need to take shelter of anything but itself. Then Brahman is not different from any substance or any power. Then by Brahman's inconceivable power, change and changelessness, form and formlessness, qualities and qualityness, and a host of other mutually contradictory natures may simultaneously and eternally exist within Brahman without negating each other's existence. Even the greatest effort of human reason cannot understand Brahman's inconceivable power. Why should we not accept the truth that Brahman has inconceivable power? Right, because it's not inconceivable that the Supreme has inconceivable powers. You know, that's something that people can accept. Right, so the inconceivability will also allow for contradictory elements to be reconciled. Because if the source is Brahman, that means then in Brahman is one, that means they have that common aspect. But in manifestation, then you see two. Right? So, in context of each other, then there's a difference. But in the context of the Supreme, then that's where the oneness is. So, in other words, everything can be engaged in the Lord's service because it's coming from the Lord. But whether one thing can be engaged with another, that's another thing. Like riding your bicycle in this wall they are contradictory of each other. You know, unless you're, you know, from the circus, can ride on top of the wall or something like that. But, you know, they don't go together. But the two can be engaged in the Lord's service. You know, one, you know, makes a boundary and the other is for getting around. Does that make sense? The glory of Brahman, who has inconceivable powers, is infinitely greater than the glory of the impersonal qualityless Brahman. I glorify the Supreme Brahman. The Brahman who has transcendental powers is the Supreme Brahman. The Brahman without qualities or powers is called merely Brahman. Because you're just talking about just Krishna's impersonal without even referring to the energies. That's just Brahman. When you understand his energies, that's then when you see more is happening. But the point is those energies, he's controlling those energies as Paramatma. And why is he controlling those energies in that way? That's because he's Bhagavan. Because he has desire. It's his will. Right? So this is the point where you can say it's God's will. Right? Yes.
Maharshi is a personalist, so Mayavadi try to understand Brahman, they stop there. They don't try to go to Paramatma.
No, because the point is, as it is, they're an individual, and their suffering is an individual. So their idea is that spiritual must mean I'm not an individual, and because of that I won't suffer. But there's a flaw in their point there, is because if I am Brahman, and I won't suffer, so if I have a form, I suffer. If I don't have a form, I won't suffer. Because it's still about themselves. It's still about this I. So their philosophy has this, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions here, I think. Is Bhaktivinoda Thakur? A fatal mistake. They're saying it's all one, but they're basing the whole thing upon their perception and their experience.
Yes.
Yeah, they're the center. So that's the point. So it's not about Brahman. It's about themselves. It's just some way that they're trying to, their ideas of their God, then they can enjoy. So it's atheistic, because they're God, not God's God. Right? Or God can be God as long as they're God also. You know, so.
So although they base their philosophy on Shakti, still they have more trust or faith in Pratyaksha, because I suffer, so I want to merge in
them. Yes, they do, but if you mention that to them, they'll say no. The point is they can't see what's behind their philosophy, because they can't see transcendental. So if you don't see Krishna, you can't see yourself. So their self-realization will be very meager. That's all. So it's only when you appreciate the transcendental position of the Lord and the living entities, then it has meaning. I glorify the Supreme Brahman. The Brahman who has transcendental powers is the Supreme Brahman. The Brahman without qualities or powers is called merely Brahman, right? So here we're saying Brahman and Supreme Brahman. That means Krishna is a person, right? While you see localized, he's dealing both with the impersonal aspect and the personal aspect, right? In other words, he's a person dealing with the impersonal, right? Because you just create the material world. It means it's specific in that it's the world, but it's generic in that it's just that's how everything functions. Universal form, all these aspects. That Brahman is merely a part of the Supreme Brahman. Right? It's his effulgence. The philosophy that turns away from the Supreme Brahman and accepts only the partial Brahman is a very inferior kind of philosophy. A philosophy born of small minds. Of this there is no doubt. This impersonalist philosophy has no power to satisfy the questions posed by good logic. It has no power to understand the true meaning of the Vedas. It has no power to give the individual spirit souls the greatest auspiciousness. Tattva Viveka 132. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta. One may equate the jiva with the avatars, because they are both called amshas. This, however, is a fallacy. Abhasha. The faulty reasoning, hate vabhasha, in this case is called sat pratipaksha. Footnote 43. Oh, here. Sat pratipaksha means existence of the opposite argument. This is an argument in which there is a contradictory reason which may prove the opposite conclusion. Avatars are the same as jivas because they are amshas. Avatars are not the same as jivas because the avatars are complete. From Banaswam. Okay. Since an opposite conclusion can be reached by citing a different reason. The word cha indicates other examples, right? So that's why we need the acharyas to understand what's the actual conclusion. Because for every statement, there is an opposite statement. Because as we said, everything comes from Krishna. So all contradictions are originally from Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the difficulty comes up is that we, without seeing Krishna, we wrestle with these contradictions. When we see everything in connection to Krishna, there's no contradiction. So that's why here we see is that point of getting past the aspect of the word, how it's used, right? Because it's used in one way, but it can also be used in an opposite way. You know what I'm saying? You take a word, you know, like, oh, that's nice. Well, that's nice. They're opposite. Same word. So that's the whole point, is that these two exist, but they only can be concluded in Krishna. So when you accept Krishna, then the point is how does this refer to Krishna in this context? How does it refer to Krishna in the other context? But when we try to make them between each other as a context, that's where the problem comes up. Without Krishna. Right? The word cha indicates other examples. The earth and ether are both substances, but one cannot say that they are completely the same. Or though the existence and non-existence are both categories, they are not the same. Thus the word amsha, applied to avatars like Matsya, refers to the Lord in a form not manifesting all the qualities. On the other hand, the same word applied to the jiva refers to his dependence on the Lord. Right, so there's a different meaning to amsha. Right, that's why you have synonyms. Right, is that the synonyms are meaning the same thing, but they can have a slightly different flavor. Like that. Yeah, I don't remember what it was. Yes.
It seems to be the nature of the mind when we hear Shastra, then we hear some statement, and then immediately the mind goes and finds, like it says here, that the opposite.
Yes,
quality.
Of course.
Sometimes we verbally express it, and sometimes we just let it sit inside ourselves. So is it like is it normal, or how do we deal with that?
Well, if you want to, yeah. That element is there is not a problem. Right? As long as you see the connection to Krishna. But if we don't see the connection to Krishna, then it's going to be always an annoyance. Right? Because the thing is, the Shabda is there, we accept Shabda. So then, that aspect is accepted. Now, differences might be in how we're going to apply it. That then is going to be the individual aspect. But to not accept the Shastra and apply it there, that's improper. Because the application of opposites only is valuable when there's possession. If there's no possession, it has no meaning. Right? Because the whole point is developing, cultivating a relationship. So if there's no sense of possession, and you use the contrary, it doesn't enhance the relationship. Does this make any...
I'm not sure about possession in this context.
Possession means that there's a relationship that you can say it's yours.
Okay.
You know, it's just like... yeah, I mean, the home, then there's that contradictory flavor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if it's dealt with, you know, according to culture, it enhances the relationship.
Yes.
Right? But if there is no relationship, then this kind of exchange doesn't enhance the relationship. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you see a common point, it can be used as a basis to generate a relationship.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. But the point is that it's based on having a relationship, it has some meaning. So the point is since the relationship's with Krishna, then the contradiction can be seen in relation to Krishna. But it's not that Krishna's involvement, it's about what's the best way to involve it connected to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The difficulty seems to be is that we can do connect things to Krishna according to our level of consciousness. Whatever is beyond, we can't connect. So it become it's just inconceivable. We just have to accept it.
Yes, but yes, we have to accept it. That's the whole point of Shraddha. You're accepting something sublime. So sublime means it's beyond perception. You know, so one has to accept that. So you've seen in so many cases that it works, so then you surrender and accept that. Because otherwise we're thinking that I'm going to arise. So the contradiction then is down on the secondary level. But when the contradiction's in context of the primary, then it's not a problem. There can be differences, but that's called vichar. For saying it's this or that, then there's a problem. Because the acharyas will explain from both many different angles. So it's just a matter of finding what works in the situation. What's the context of what we're talking about?
Because often devotees, they demand an answer which is obviously beyond their level of consciousness.
Yes, but like then you have to point that out. It says that you're demanding, but what's your position to demand?
But then they're offended. It's like, whoa.
Then what's your position to be offended? What's your right to be offended? Are you the center of the universe that it's all about you? Somehow or another, you can be offended, but no one else should be in the whole universe. If you're offended, that's offensive. And if you're not offended, then no one else should be. When are we going to accept that it's about Krishna? You can try that. And generally right there is what they're going to do, at least with devotees. But even with the karmis, I guarantee it would work. Because they don't think. So it's just a matter, because they say, you know, we're in this position, we have this right. Then they don't think beyond that. You know, it's like he said, blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas. Right? Because it's come up and it's become popular. Everyone uses these buzzwords or this things like that. They don't think about it. They don't know why they're there. They just do that. As soon as you question it in a logical way, you know, it's just like you're one individual in this room. What if everybody else isn't offended and you are? So now is it your right to impose your offended nature on everybody else? So now what if somebody else is there? Or what if everybody in the room is offended and you're not? Now, so that means everybody should impose upon you. I mean, no, then it's no, but we're all different. We, you know, we agree to disagree and everything. But if you see you're wrong, then we agree to disagree. If you think the other person's wrong, no, it has to be done like this. So who establishes the authority? Because then there is no authority. Each individual will say that theirs is the authority. That's why we have to accept Shastra. That's why Praman is there. Otherwise, we can unlimitedly go on and argue. Right? But the contrary nature is inherent. It's just a matter, are we connecting it to Krishna or not? So therefore, the principle, that we can't contradict, because you can't contradict Krishna. So it's only in the secondary that there's contradictions. In the primary, there's no contradiction. He's non-dual substance. There is no contradiction. But his energies are unlimited. There you can find contradictions. So there's only contradiction on the secondary level or in applications. There is no contradiction on understanding, the primary aspect. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes this point. I think it may be in this Tattva Vivek, that he says that in the spiritual world, there is no contradictions in the understandings of the living entities there in pure devotional service. There isn't any. They all understand in the same way. It's a matter of taste. That makes a difference between the realms and the rasas. But not in understanding.
So tattva is one.
Tattva is one. It's just how much tattva is being explained. So a Chintabheda Bheda tattva will explain the maximum amount of tattva. But the point is even then we can say is that, well, the others are incomplete. They're incomplete only in comparison with unlimited. You know, here is that. So how much is being revealed? So when we say revealed scriptures, is how much is there. Like we see the Goswamis wrote more books, but then in their wisdom they understood that no one's going to get any benefit from this because they're beyond their position. So then they buried those books. right? And what books they did leave, they're above our head. So, you know. So, yeah. So it's just a matter of seeing what the flavor is and whether you go in very pleasantly, whether you have to catch their attention by just pointing out, is they're talking about rights? It's like, but where does the rights, who authorized these rights? You know, where did they come from? You're saying it's your right to know, but where? What's the authority of that? Are you the authority? If you're the authority, then, you know, then why don't you, you know, run everything, you know? Like that. So you know, and so they say, no, but I'll run everything. So the first thing you do is hand them all the bills. Say, you pay this. You know, like that. You know, I say, we're going up to Galilee for a vacation, you know. So that's the whole point, is that you just find what works there. Because at some point you have to cut through and make them think. So when you're dealing with this blinded allegiance, unthinking allegiance to their ideas, then you somehow or another have to wake them up. Whether you can do it pleasantly, you know, whether it's a story or analogy, or, you know, it's just like Narad Muni waking up Prachina Barhishat through this story, this analogy and all that. But he was intelligent enough to catch it. As it's going, he's starting to see the connections with his life. Like that. So then by the end, the Narad Muni doesn't have to say anything. He understands. He may have to explain some details of how he can apply it. But it's just a matter of seeing what you need to cut through. You know, unfortunately, live by the sword, die by the sword. So since they're just coming up, my right, and this and that, then it's by that process, then it'll be pointed out that it's not their right. I mean, who defined it as their right? You say it's your right. Does your mother say it's your right? You know, there's a good chance she doesn't.
In some cases, she does.
Yeah. But what would she do? That's another thing. So she's, in other words, it's between her son and you, then her son's right. But if it's what she would like her son to be doing, then that's something else again.
Right.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's why then the culture is there, that this sense of possession has its natural positions. Because we deal with it simply due to attachment. But that unbridled attachment, then we don't think about things. There isn't duties. We don't deal with things properly. So we can't tell the difference between one thing and another. So the Vedic concept is that sense of possession has its particular places, because possession means then there's obligation. Mm-hmm. With possession you get rights, but there's obligation. But here they're saying they demand an answer, but according to what's their obligation to this process. If you're the one that's supposed to give them an answer, what are they giving in return?
Well, they should accept it, obviously.
Yeah, they should accept it. It should be asked in a submissive way, you know, in a cultured way, like that. And are they trying to find the answer to apply it in their life, or they're simply bringing this up just to create trouble? Because it goes against what they think. So is it about finding the truth? Because if they've already found the truth, then why are they in the class? You know, unless they're there just to set good example, like Krishna said. He has nothing to do, but if he doesn't do, then the whole world will be ruined. So by them sitting in the class, now everything goes nicely. Is that?
Now, without training, we cannot understand.
No, that's the point. That's why we have to, there has to be that faith that in what's beyond. But we've seen it working, because the point is, as you can see, that point is beyond this is the supreme, and here is his energies. But we see the energies work in a very systematic way. And so therefore that means it's because it's coming from the supreme. So we start. So at least we accept by symptoms that is there.
Yes.
And so with that kind of faith, we can move forward.
Yes.
Yeah, there has to be something higher. So that's the point, is something. So you can set all these things, but if it's material, you get a material result. But the soul being spiritual, then if we use spiritual standards, we'll get a spiritual result. Does that make sense?
So there will be advancement, but it is correct.
Yes, well, Vance says the attitude is correct. Or Krishna will make the attitude correct through his external energy. And she's got a very well worked in pair of bobber boots. No? They're these kind of big leather lace up boots that got like hobnails on the bottom and a steel toe. Yeah, so. You know, kicking, stomping, you know, like this. She will make it work. You will surrender. You know, like that.
By hook or by crook.
Yes, by hook or by crook. And she will use both, along with a bludgeon, you know. She's fine. She's good. It's like you see those forms of Durga when she's out on a tiger. She's got 10 arms.
Yes, yes.
Those are all her, you know, what she uses to get the work done. Bhagavatam verse reference. Ooh, yes. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:6-8. The gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord is the first incarnation and plenary portion of the Supersoul. He is the self of the unlimited number of living entities. And in him rests the aggregate creation, which thus flourishes. Right? So all this, what we call as Brahman, is all resting in him.
Mm-hmm.
He's in control of that Brahman.
Yes.
It's not that Brahman's just existing there. It's coming from him, an expansion of him. So he's the aggregate of all the soul. But at the same time, he's a portion of the super soul. So in here, Karana Daksha Vishnu. So he's the super soul of Mahatattva. Right, so then he's. Oh no, I think here they're talking about him. So then they're talking about the super soul would be going back to Sankarsana, you know, then in Mahanarayan, like that, because he's has that element. Because from there expands Vaikuntha. You can use it at any level. Does that make sense?
Please, please can you explain again about Sankarsana Mahanarayan in context to this?
He's a portion of the super soul.
Yeah.
Who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Who's the who referring to?
I was referring to Shri Dakshina Vishnu.
Yeah, but here's the gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord. So we're talking about universal form, then it's the first incarnation, a plenary portion of the super soul. So we're using gigantic universal form. Then we're talking about universal form within the universe. That means we're talking about Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who's expansion of Kiradakshaya Vishnu. We're taking it as the primary creation and that aspect of it. In the overall, then he's an expansion of Sankarshan, who's an expansion of Mahanarayan. He is the self of an unlimited number of living entities. But that's just within this universe or the whole Mahatattva. And in him rests the aggregate creation, which is thus flourishes. Because if you're connecting to Krishna, you can apply it wherever it applies. The point is that we're bringing out is the Lord is expanding from himself. And he's manifesting a certain portion. That's why he's an umsha, because it's not the same amount as the umshi. Because otherwise, if it is, you give it a different name. Like when Krishna expands at the Rasa dance, you don't say they're all umshas. You just say it's him.
Yes.
Yes. That makes sense? So that means he's expanding. At the same time, as you have all the unlimited number of living entities, they rest in him. They're coming from him. So they're different. So you can't say the umsha, the jiva is an umsha, and the Lord is an umsha are the same. Because this umsha we say we're the same as, he's an umsha of someone else. And we're not like this.
Because Krishna expands in the
Rasa,
he's called as Prakash, not
Amish. Yes, yes, yes. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:42. He, the personality of Godhead, as the maintainer of all the universe, appears in different incarnations after establishing the creation. And thus he reclaims all kinds of conditioned souls among the humans, the non-humans, and the demigods. Right, so here you have the Supreme Personality coming in different incarnations, and he reclaims the souls. They're different from him. The incarnations are expansions, are umshas of the Supreme Lord, and the living entities are then further. It means, how you say? They're other expansions. 8.84. Srila Prabhupada comments. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, incarnates himself in different societies of living entities to reclaim them from the clutches of illusion. And such activities of the Lord are not limited only to human society. He incarnates himself even as a fish, hog, tree, and many other forms. But less intelligent persons who have no knowledge of him deride him, even if he is in human society as a human being. The Lord therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita 9.11, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam parambhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. As we have already discussed in the previous verses, it is concluded that the Lord is never a product of the material creation. His transcendental position is always unchanged. He is the eternal form of knowledge and bliss, and he executes his almighty will by his different energies. As such, he is never the subject of reactions for any of his acts. He is transcendental to all conceptions of actions and reactions. Even if he is visible, right? Because he gives the rules on how everything works, because it's by his will, so it acts according to his will. So how it's working, that's the rule. So he's above that. And it's just like the children are playing a game and making rules for the game. They're above those rules. They're making those rules because it pleases them. It's not that they have to follow those rules. They're making rules to please themselves. Right? It makes it more fun. Right? We have the idea no rules is fun. No, it's when there's rules is fun. Right? Because otherwise everybody does something else. Right? Can you imagine it? You have this one, you know, how you say, sport pitch out there. And then there's a ball out there, and then when you start with the ball, someone starts to deal with the ball like it's soccer, someone else then deals with like it's rugby, someone else like it's basketball, someone else like it's baseball, you know, someone else is cricket, someone else is golf, you know. And so how do you have a game? You know, like that. So, or each one of them brings their own ball, and then they start all like this and that. And so it's just, the point is that it Krishna makes rules because then it gives focus to the interaction. Because if it's about relationship, then it's about relationship that has a particular focus. Because that'll give a specific taste. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well.
Yes, the rules are to enhance relationship. But because we have a different idea of how we're going to enjoy, right? So we want to control it the way we want. But the point is, it's about enjoying in the situations that's there. Not about being an illusion about the situation and trying to act in a different way. That's why Varnashram's there, religion is there to show us what is the rules regarding that particular situation you're in. For application. But they all have to be connected to the Supreme, otherwise they have no meaning. If you only use them for interaction, the religious principles for interaction between one situation and another, and that's it, then what's the point of it? Because the situation remains. Right? And whatever it is that you say, no, but it's relationships there on the material platform. But those relationships and that aren't coming from the soul. They're coming from the Paramatma. They're coming from the universal form. So it's just interaction between Krishna's energies and Krishna's energies in connection to himself. So on that level, it's going nicely. But our taking part in it, we don't get any benefit. The Lord's transcendental. For him, it's fun. But for us, it's not. Right? So there's no eternal position, no benefit for the soul. Now when we see all these things in connection with the Lord, then that religious process has meaning. Because now you're expressing the relationship directed at the Lord. And other living entities, if you see in that context of their connection with the Lord, then that between living entities has meaning. So Varnashram is the natural form if you want to include the Lord and his living entities in a scientific way. If you just want to go out and play Calvin ball, then you can do whatever you like, but it's not that anybody else can understand what's going on. And you're not including the Lord.
Maharaj, when we find it difficult to follow the rules, then we should always remember this particular fact that rules are going to increase the taste.
Yes. But the point is to increase the taste, but the taste is in relationship to Krishna.
Yes.
So the rules in relationship to Krishna, therefore taste is in relationship to Krishna. Yes. The results are in relationship to Krishna. It's all in relationship to Krishna. So when you see it in its relationship to Krishna, then it's less of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or, because it's in relationship to Krishna, it's his energy, then there are alternatives in case that particular application of the rule in that situation doesn't work.
Yes.
Some reason. Okay.
Even if he's visible.
Okay. Even if he's visible in the material world, the exhibition is only of his internal energy.
Mm-hmm.
For he is above the good and bad conceptions of the material world. He's only dealing with his internal potency. Then the internal potency, according to the situation, is transforming and is acting as the external potency.
Mm-hmm.
So he's dealing with the internal potency. But let's say you have one of the demons in Vrindavan, they're dealing with the external potency.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So he's always above conceptions. Because they're about the connection to him. So when we see all the rules in connection to Krishna, then they take on a different flavor. We see them as a problem because we see the rule in connection with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And therefore, in connection with ourselves, we say, this is not good for me.
Mm-hmm.
When in actuality, it's fine for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always the Lord's energy. So the principle always applies. That connection to Krishna applies. And those things that the acharyas say still apply, then we use them like that. And those things that the acharyas say that there's no need of, then we don't have to use. But they define of the rules what we use and what we don't and how we use them. But the point is the principle is the common point. You know, it's just like for the Brahmin, he takes bath 3 times a day. Right? But in the modern context, everything happens in the middle of the day.
Yes.
So therefore, taking that noon bath and your Sandhya Bandhan and all that doesn't work out.
Yes.
So that kind of aspect is there. But what's the purpose of the Sandhya Bandhan? Is to worship the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, where you can worship the Lord, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you perform your duties in connection with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't worry about these secondary rules too, that are in support of serving the Lord. If they're not able to be performed.
Mm-hmm.
But to say, no, in Kali Yuga you can't take a noon bath, that's foolish.
Because
mm-hmm. you can. If the situation is different, then you can. You know, but to say it's Kali Yuga so you can't do it, that's not proper. That's why you see they'll talk about it, and that these are the standards. Then you go to apply it, then you see your situation, and then you see what applies. So it has to be, you know the principle, you know the standard rule, and then you know the application to the situation. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then everything has to adjust like that. Oh, that's that line. Okay. He's taking out a line of bricks, and I'm not sure which one he is, but hopefully it's the right one. Because there's two of them there. Does this make sense? So that's what the thoughtfulness is there. That's why we depend upon Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra to make that decision. But if it's our own mind making the decision, it'll always be faulty. Therefore, the four defects. But those who are apta, they're beyond defects. The Shastra is beyond defects. So there's no problem. So, yeah.
You can say that the acharya is a group leader.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's it. Is that they know, because why? They've heard from authority. The group leaders heard from whoever is then above them.
Yes.
And like that, then the line goes.
And when we follow it, it's easy.
It's easy. You just do, because they know it works. And then from observation, or someone has a doubt in that, you try to explain it. They can't explain it, it goes up the line.
Yes.
right? And then at some point, if there's something more to consider, then you extend, you know, the application. Or if not, then the person is trained, and then they understand and see how it works. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the material world, he is above the good and bad conception of the material world. In the material world, the fish or the hog may be considered lower than the man, but when the Lord appears as a fish or a hog, he is neither of them in the material conception. It is his causeless mercy that appears in every society or species of life, but he is never to be considered one of them. So that means all the 8,400,000 the Lord appears in. Right? And by that, then they can all have their connection to him. And anybody can, remembering the Lord in these, can. Conceptions of the material world, such as good and bad, lower and upper, important and insignificant, are estimations of the material energy. And the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all such conceptions. Right? So they have meaning within itself. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just like what we say, you have the game, it has its rules, but it doesn't apply in other, outside the game. Right? In the stadium they apply, but when you're out on the road, it doesn't apply. So the same way within the material context, they apply, they don't apply outside. So that's it. Yeah.
When you say about the dualities, like hot and cold, so we have the dualities only in the material world, but in the spiritual world, we do not have the dualities.
But what does duality mean? When you say hot and cold, when you say there's no dual, what's the consideration of hot and cold here that you're applying?
Yeah, that means the difference in the temperatures that you have.
That we understand. We understand that context, but how are you applying it? Why do you want to bring out that you don't have hot and cold in the spiritual world? What's the problem with hot and cold?
Because there's suffering.
There's suffering. So therefore, to get rid of suffering, we have to get rid of hot and cold. You understand? That's the impersonal concept. Is that there in the spiritual world, there's hot and cold, but there's no suffering. Here it causes suffering. Because it's duality. There it's all in connection with Krishna. Right? It's just, yes, like that. You know, it's just like, let's say, let us say you're in, this may or may not work for you. One may work. Let's say it's warm out, warm, the weather's warm, so you're sitting in a, you know, kind of a cool place. You know, with a cool drink, you know, with a fan. Is it okay? Is it good or not? Yes, okay. So similarly, when it's cold, if you're sitting there next to a nice fire, you know, with a nice warm drink and wearing some nice warm clothes, right, and a comfortable, it's nice, right? So that's the whole point is that hot and cold are for creating those nice situations for Krishna's pleasure. But because we're trying to enjoy hot and cold not with Krishna, we end up with the not so pleasant parts of hot and cold. Yeah? You understand? So in the spiritual world, they have it. But how much cold does it need to get out your chudder or to have a warm drink? It's just a few degrees.
Yes.
And how much does it need for it to be warm? I mean, it's just like now, you're wearing that chudder. But after a couple of hours, you won't be. Right? And it's only a difference of probably about 4 degrees. So that's all that's required. You know, so that it's minus 50 in Siberia is not necessary in the spiritual world. Right? We don't hear of Krishna in his igloo pastimes. You know, it's just like, yeah.
Maharaj, when you speak about the six seasons, they are all related to Krishna.
They're all related to Krishna.
They are also like a person.
Yeah. Oh, they're personified, but they have their form that they manifest through. It doesn't mean that they can't be a person, and at the same time as the energies be functioning as the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis to manifest the situation to experience that particular season.
Yes.
Right? Because it's warm, but it's the beginning of warm.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? It's rains, but it's the end of rains.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's cold, but it's the beginning of cold. So that way you get six seasons.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you get these different flavors. Each of the six seasons has its own unique flavor.
Yes.
And if you appreciate those flavors, then they're nice.
Yes, yes.
Like that.
Like the spices.
Yeah, like spices. Yeah, they're like that. They're like spices. They just add to what's already going. So the pastimes between Krishna's devotees is already wonderful. But you add in these spices to give more variety. So you have the seasons, you have the time of the day. You know, you have the different positions that the devotees are in the five rasas. You know, they have the relationships between those rasas. You know, you have the different ages that are there. You know, the different moods. You know, that, what do you call it? Dhirodatta, Dhiralalita, Dhiraprashanta, Dhirodatta. You know, like this. You have all these different things. That way you end up with, I think, 96 different flavors of the hero. And by the same kind of considerations with the heroine, I think you end up with 200 and some odd. Like that. You know, different varieties. So within that, then you can create all these nice tastes. And then you add to that the different seasons, the different things. Yes. So you just have this unlimited thing that you can always keep going on. Yes. Conceptions of the material world, such as good and bad, lower and upper, important and insignificant, are estimations of the material energy, and the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all such conceptions. The word param bhavam, or transcendental nature, can never be compared to the material conception. We should not forget that the potencies of the Almighty Lord are always the same and do not decrease because the Lord assumes the form of a lower animal. There is no difference between Lord Sri Ram, Lord Sri Krishna, and his incarnations as a fish and a hog. He is all-pervading and simultaneously localized to any and every place. That's the point. He's everywhere, but at the same time he's all-pervading at the same time as he's there at a particular place and can be at any place. And all places at once. Mm-hmm. So that's the point. But the foolish person, that's the point. He can be everywhere, meaning all pervading, but at the same time be a person everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is a person. That's the thing. We're taking it the impersonal, because that seems to be more easy to logically deal with. But the point is, he's a person. The impersonal is expansion of the person. Right, because if you don't have the expansion, then how do you interact? Right, just like let's say we have the Cowherd Boys, okay? So for the Cowherd Boys, a display of strength, will that not be something appreciated?
Yes.
Right. So therefore, you have to have the impersonal concept of strength for then the personal application of it. By Krishna or Sudama or Balaram manifesting it, then it has taste. So that means there already has to be the situation that strength is appreciated. You know, or cleverness, or, you understand? So that's the point, is that the impersonal is simply the effulgence of Krishna's glories. Right? So they have a generic sense. And they have the specific, but they come from the personal, from the original, from the person. So, but a foolish person with a poor fund of knowledge, for want of the param bhavam of the Lord, cannot understand how the Supreme Lord can take the form of a man or a fish. One compares everything to one's own standard of knowledge, right? Because that's what we were saying when we started before, is that they'll say is what they think and what they're saying, that is the standard, right? They are the, you know, they're the praman, they're the authority, they're the shabda. I mean, they are making sound, but it doesn't mean that they're the authority, right? Empty pots make sound also, right? You know. As One compares everything to one's own standard of knowledge, as the frog in the well considers the sea to be like the well. Right? So that's why he's saying that Amsha. Okay, so we're the same as the Lord. Right? Like that. The frog in the well cannot even think of the sea. And when such a frog is informed of the greatness of the sea, it takes the conception of the sea as being a little greater than the well. He just thinks it's a bigger well than what he's got. As such, one who is foolish about the transcendental science of the Lord will find it difficult to understand how Lord Vishnu equally manifested himself in every society of living entities. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.42. So it's only by association with those who are transcendental that then we gain that intelligence, right? Because Krishna's intelligence, he reveals it. And why? Because of that devotion. So those favorable dealings, that's what makes it work. So it's a gradual process. It can be very quick. We see examples of it. But if it doesn't happen that quick, then you know we're on the gradual path. So if you want to know, well, should I be practicing Vaidhi or Rag? If you're asking that question, it's Vaidhi. Like that. That's it. I can only see this much of the guy's head, one of the guy's heads. Okay. Set. We're good? Yeah? Cool? Kind of? Yeah. Okay. Adhikarana 17. The jivas are not identically the same. Adrishta niyama dikaranam. Sutra reference 2-3, 49 to 51. Adhikarana Prakashika. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakar refutes the opponent's proposal claiming all jivas to be identical in their experience. It is explained that although the individual souls share the same spiritual nature, their fates are diverse. These unseen fates govern the variegated desires that individual souls possess, leading the living entities to different locations, such as the location of Swargaloka, Patalaloka, etc. Finally, the Sutrakar includes that the different fates of the individual spirit souls is the root cause for the differences in jivas. Footnote 85. So this difference is also is the nature of the jiva. They may have common qualities in that they're jivas, but the particular uniqueness of the personality, that's different. So because of that uniqueness and the difference, they're approaching the material energy, and according to gaining the particular taste, then they're going down the particular path they're on. Now, you have unlimited ways you can put these paths together. They're following through the modes of nature. But the point is that because they're an individual, that's why they're all in different aspects of the modes of nature. But that doesn't mean that what their aspects are here has anything to do with there, other than they are servant of the Lord. Does that make sense? It's not that, okay, you know, if you're in a particular position here, you can be there, so I want to go out and herd the cows because then I can be a cowherd boy in the spiritual world. You don't, that kind of stuff doesn't apply.
When you say that all the jivas are the same, what is their motivation behind this particular claim?
They're all the same, then they're all Brahman. With that. Because otherwise, if it's just that this pot and that, and you're merging in all the living entities, what about all those ones that haven't yet? So does that impact your merging? You know? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that the jiva's bewilderment is the cause of his material entanglement. Jare Badha Shananda Brahmo Vaikunta Brahmascha Sangata. Because the attachment to inert matter, the conditioned soul, is bewildered about happiness and about the spiritual world. So, they don't know what is actual happiness. You're attached to the secondary. Because happiness isn't from the secondary platform. It's from the primary. It's from Krishna. Krishna's anandamayo vyasa. Right? So all happiness is coming from him. Right? But, because by the principle of Satkaryavad, that the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis are also coming from him. Therefore, they will have some aspect of that point of that they're coming from Ananda, their cause. Right? For the Lord's pleasure, then they're expanding to create situations within that you can experience this happiness. So they also have that little bit, but it's small. So when it's in connection with the Lord, it matches nicely and you get the full experience. But when you try to enjoy them separately from the Lord, what experience you'll get? That they have some little bit, but the point is still that it's because of its connection to the Lord. It's still Satkaryavas. It's still connected. So if we don't connect it, then that little bit we get is simply that by your interacting with the Lord on the particular material platform you are acting on. Like we said, if you're acting with him in the form of money, how you deal with him, if you deal appropriately with him as money, then you get that experience. Like that. And if not, you don't. So it's still, that happiness is coming from the Lord, but because you're trying to experience that happiness simply in the secondary without the Lord, it's only going to be that small amount anyway. You can't get beyond that small amount. That's the whole point, is that because it's...
And you feel frustration. After that, you become frustrated.
Yes, you become frustrated. So we look for an alternative.
Yes.
Now, as long as that alternative is Krishna consciousness, then that being frustrated has a value.
Yes.
But if in that becoming frustrated, then we take up some other material pursuit, then we just entangle ourselves in a different way. You know, because now it's new and fresh, therefore we're very enthusiastic to entangle ourselves. You know, and then we find out it's just the same thing, and then we give it up. So, yes?
Some days ago we discussed Ananda and Sukha.
Yes.
So both connected to Krishna, but
yes.
One is within primary, the other one is within secondary.
Yes. The Sukha means is you're simply, it means what's happening in secondary. Let's start with it. Sukha is that the arrangement that I wanted to happen, happened.
Yeah.
I call that happiness. It's not that the experience, we're experiencing that, what I wanted happened. We're not experiencing what happened. We're experiencing that it happened.
Can it be both?
Well, just first look at this. It's about that, because when we go beyond it happened, then, you know, it's just like, let's say you wanted something really bad and you got a ticket for that. So you're so happy that you got the ticket.
Yeah.
But when you get to the whatever it was, you may not be as impressed as you thought.
Yeah.
So it's that. So when we're looking at jnana and kriya, what are they doing? What is their role in the pastime?
They arrange this.
Their arrangements. So therefore, good arrangements means that the jnana and kriya went nicely. But it's only for the purpose of pleasing Krishna.
Right.
So we're only looking at nice arrangements, because the Icha Shakti is left out. We try to replace it with our own Icha, but we don't really have that potency. You know?
Yeah.
It's by Krishna's grace. He is the life heirs. That's why the body's alive. That's why we can be conscious of it. Otherwise, then what are we going to pervade? You know, without Krishna. So then this mechanical function won't work nicely. It won't give us satisfaction, because the happiness is actually on the platform of Ananda, which means in relationship to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So that little bit that's there, you know, from the jnana and kriya aspects, that's not going to satisfy us. It gets bigger depending on where you are in the material world. Like, you know, for the demigods, they'll have more of it than us.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And then above that, the sages, above that, the Prajapatis, above that, Brahma. And so that will seem like, you know, so much compared to what we have on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But that's compared to just a drop to the ocean of bliss from not being connected with the material, just being liberated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's considered, you know, depending upon the discussion, fraction of a portion of a drop of the unlimited ocean, because the Brahman is a limited, I mean, it's like an ocean that we see. We have experienced that. This is an unlimited ocean. And then I think we just came across something where you're saying even if you take it and multiply it by, you know, millions, I mean, billions and trillions, it won't even compare to a drop from that ocean. So they're only trying to give an idea. You can't actually compare them at all. So it's just a matter of our conditioning, where we are, and according to the modes of nature, what experience we have. But if you always experience of that, it becomes ordinary for you. It's just like, let's say, have you ever had some situation where you either are in, means you have the room by whatever reason, or you're able to visit the room that is, you know, that big, you know, the fanciest room, either in the palace or in a hotel or something like that, and you can just appreciate how great it is and big, and the space and the light and the furnishing and the facilities and like that. And we think it's something very special compared to what we generally end up in. But if that's where someone lives, then for them that's ordinary. And then when they have to, you know, for the summer vacation, switch to the summer palace, and they don't really like it as much because it's smaller and all that, then they're grumpy. Well, we'd be quite comfortable with the summer palace also. You know?
Yeah.
Like that. We're happy with any palace. So that's the thing, is you become conditioned. So Indra, for him, his happiness that he gets, it's standard for him. I mean, he's always happy, but it's just like he gets belligerent, just like you see the teenager gets belligerent when they first come in contact with their, you know, some awareness of their abilities and things they can do and enjoyments like that, and they become so proud that they're the greatest, you know. Yeah, what is it? The latest and the greatest, like that. You know, then with after some time, then whatever before they thought was so fabulous, now is just pretty ordinary. And then they're starting to see what others have, you know, like that. And, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like that. You know.
Maharaj, then actually the jiva, he never has an experience of anandam in the material world. He only has an experience of sukha. But when the jiva comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, then only he can experience it in the material world also.
Means the jiva experiences ananda in connection with Krishna, and he only experiences at best sukha if he's not in connection with Krishna. So it's not about the location.
Okay.
Yeah. The conditioned soul is bewildered about happiness because he is attached to the material world. He thinks he will find happiness in the material world, in Swargaloka, in an excellent material body, or in some other way. Because he is attached to the objects in this material world, he is also bewildered about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and about the transcendental abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:10:26, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, "In the human race, the mode of passion is very prominent. Humans are always busy in the midst of miserable life, but they think themselves happy in all respects." In the Katha Upanishad 1:1:12, Nachiketa tells Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, "Svarge loke na bhayam kinchana nasti na tatra tvam naj araya bibeti ubhe tirtva asanaya pipase shoka tigo modate svarga loke." In the spiritual world, there is no fear of old age or of you, O death. There one crosses beyond both of them. In the spiritual world, there is no anxiety to attain food and drink. The residents of the spiritual world enjoy transcendental bliss. Right? Because there's no anxieties about these things. Because the facility is there, but they only want it for Krishna. They're only thinking of how to use all these for Krishna. So there's no anxiety about obtaining any of these things. But because we want them for ourselves here, then there's anxiety. Right? If it's all for Krishna, then Krishna's arranging everything. If it's for yourself, then arrange it yourself.
Mm.
In the Katha Upanishad 1.1.26, Nachiketa says, Svo bhava martasya yad ana kaitat sarvendriyanam jarayanti teja api sarvam jivitam alpam eva tavaiva bahas tava nritya gite. Every human being soon meets his death. Quickly his senses become old and weak. Everyone's life is brief. Your chariots, singing and dancing, will last only for a moment. Right? Because you mentioned here, why chariots? Because, you know, people, their ride is very important for them. You know, it's one of the status aspects. Is, you know, you have where you live, what you drive, you know, what you live in, you know, what's your furniture, all these different aspects like that. So all that will go away. And then what you do in those places, so the singing and dancing, so all that will be temporary and will be gone. Numundaku Upanishad 1.2.12, it is said, Parikshya lokan karma chitan brahmano nirveda mayan nashtya krita kritena yaj vigyan artam gurum evabhigachet samit pani shrotram bhama shrotriyam brahmanishtam. Seeing the true nature of the heavenly material planets attained by pious deeds, a brahmana no longer desires to go there. He becomes renounced and desires to learn the science of transcending the material world. To learn the transcendental subject matter, one must approach a spiritual master. In so doing, he must carry fuel to burn in sacrifice, right? Because it's got to be, you're going to, this knowledge you gain is going to be, have to applied in sacrifice. So you have to be willing to perform sacrifice to apply the knowledge. The symptom of such a spiritual master is that he's expert in understanding the Vedic conclusion, and thereby he constantly engages in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.10, it is said, Ishta purtam manyamana varishtam nanyach treo virayante pramudha nakasya priste sukrite nu bhutva imam lokam hina taram va vishanti. Thinking material pious deeds the best of all actions, and affirming that no other action is better than them. Fools go to Swargaloka, enjoy, and then again return to this world, or the worlds beneath it. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.